Today, the Fed's higher for longer ripple effect. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and property news. Well, Wednesday, as it turned out, was a game in two halves, with a slightly better than expected CPI read in the morning from the US, before the Fed's no change decision later, but that was impacted by a more hawkish stance in the subsequent press conference. Risk on assets had rallied after the CPI report, because it showed that the US core consumer price index fell to the lowest in more than 3 months. But later, the Federal Reserve penciled in just one quarter point interest rate cut this year, down from three seen in March. Now, the CPI core goods inflation was actually in negative territory, but the news was not all as good as that. Remember that to account for the one-off questions over measuring shelter prices, Chair Jerome Powell and his colleagues chose to focus on the so-called super core of services excluding housing, a measure particularly influenced by wages. The good news is that both indices fell last month just a little bit. The bad news, though, is that they're still far too high for comfort and continue to make it hard to cut rates. And so the Fed decided to hold rates, but played the data-dependent higher for longer card again.
Inflation has eased substantially from a peak of 7% to 2.7%, but is still too high. We are strongly committed to returning inflation to our 2% goal in support of a strong economy that benefits everyone. Today, the FOMC decided to leave our policy interest rate unchanged and to continue to reduce our securities holdings. We are maintaining our restrictive stance of monetary policy in order to keep demand in line with supply and reduce inflationary pressures. FOMC participants expect labor market strength to continue. The median unemployment rate projection in the SEP is 4.0% at the end of this year and 4.2% at the end of next year. Inflation has eased notably over the past 2 years, but remains above our longer run goal of 2%. Total PCE prices rose 2.7% over the 12 months ending in April. Excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core PCE prices rose 2.8%. The Consumer Price Index, which came out this morning and tends to run higher than the PCE price index, rose 3.3% over the 12 months ending in May, and the core CPI rose 3.4%. The inflation data received earlier this year were higher than expected, though more recent monthly readings have eased somewhat. Longer-term inflation expectations appear to remain well anchored, as reflected in a broad range of surveys of households and businesses and forecasters, as well as measures from financial markets. The median projection in the SEP for total PCE inflation is 2.6% this year, 2.3% next year, and 2.0% in 2026. My colleagues and I are acutely aware that high inflation imposes significant hardship as it erodes purchasing power, especially for those least able to meet the higher costs of essentials like food, housing, and transportation. Our monetary policy actions are guided by our dual mandate to promote maximum employment and stable prices for the American people. In support of these goals, the committee decided at today's meeting to maintain the target range for the federal funds rate at 5.25% to 5.5%. And to continue reducing our securities holdings. As labor market tightness has eased and inflation has declined over the past year, the risks to achieving our employment and inflation goals have moved toward better balance. The economic outlook is uncertain, however, and we remain highly attentive to inflation risks. We've stated that we do not expect it will be appropriate to reduce the target range for the federal funds rate until we have gained greater confidence that inflation is moving sustainably toward 2%. So far this year, the data have not given us that greater confidence. The most recent inflation readings have been more favorable than earlier in the year, however, and there has been modest further progress toward our inflation objective. We'll need to see more good data to bolster our confidence that inflation is moving sustainably toward 2%. We know that reducing policy restraint too soon or too much could result in a reversal of the progress that we've seen on inflation. At the same time, reducing policy restraint too late or too little could unduly weaken economic activity and employment. In considering any adjustments to the target range for the federal funds rate, the committee will carefully assess incoming data, the evolving outlook, and the balance of risks. In our SEP, FOMC participants wrote down their individual assessments of an appropriate path for the federal funds rate, based on what each participant judges to be the most likely scenario going forward. If the economy evolves as expected, the median participant projects that the appropriate level of the federal funds rate will be 5.1% at the end of this year, 4.1% at the end of 2025, and 3.1% at the end of 2026. But these projections are not a committee plan or any kind of a decision. As the economy evolves, assessments of the appropriate policy path will adjust in order to best promote our maximum employment and price stability goals. If the economy remains solid and inflation persists, we're prepared to maintain the current target range for the federal funds rate as long as appropriate. If the labor market were to weaken unexpectedly, or if inflation were to fall more quickly than anticipated, we're prepared to respond. Policy is well positioned to deal with the risks and uncertainties that we face in pursuing both sides of our dual mandate. We'll continue to make our decisions meeting by meeting, based on the totality of the data and its implications for the outlook and the balance of risks.
And in fact, the journos were, well, pretty confused, as you can see from their questions.
If you could walk me through the committee's average inflation forecast, core PCE is now forecast to be 2.8% by the year end. It's already 2.75, and after today's number, there were several forecasts on the street that it would be 2.6 at the end of this month. Does that tell you that the average official expects no further progress in inflation, and in fact that it's going to get worse? And if you have this wrong, doesn't it mean that you sort of you could have wrong the outlook for rates there?
Yeah, so what's going on there is that we had very low readings in the second half of last year, June through December, really, and we're now lapping those. So as you go through the 12-month window, a very low reading drops out and a new reading comes in. The new reading gets added to the 12-month window. So it's just a slight element of conservatism that we're assuming a certain level of incoming monthly PCE and core PCE numbers. We're assuming, you know, a good but not great numbers. And if you put that on top of where we are now, you get a very slight increase in the 12-month reading. Now, do we have high confidence that that's right? No, it's just a kind of conservative way for forecasting things. If we were to get more readings like today's reading, then of course that wouldn't be the case. So it's just a forecasting device. I think, let me say that we welcome today's reading and hope for more like that.
But if it comes in, just to follow up, it comes in the way you forecast it, it would seem strange for you to be cutting rates at all in context of a rising core PCE. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think what we said is that we don't think it'll be appropriate to reduce rates and begin to loosen policy until we have more confidence that inflation is moving back down to 2% on a sustainable basis. And that's the test we've applied. I don't know that this rules that in or out. I mean, really, it's a forecast, a fairly conservative forecast month by month that would lead to slightly higher 12 months rates by the end of the year. If we get better ratings than that, then you will see that come down or remain the same. If you're at 2.6, 2.7, that's a really good place to be.
Now, you can recall that many at the start of 2024 were expecting a pantheon of rate cuts, as many as 6 or even 7 at one point, though those watching this channel will know I was not convinced. Because of the sticky nature of inflation, the delay in easing monetary policy and keeping rates higher for longer does have big implications for the US economy, but it also reverberates around the world. Those deep cut expectations continued to fade from the start of the year because of the sticky elements in inflation, and that replaced the easy to call goods base effects earlier in the year. So, Fed Chair Jerome Powell on June the 12th signaled there would be just one cut in 2024 and forecast more for 2025, reinforcing policymakers' calls to keep borrowing costs higher for longer to suppress inflation. Now, the trusty dot plots, where individual members placed their bets on rates ahead, is actually quite telling, in that last time around, a slight majority thought there would be at least three cuts this year. Now, nobody does. A majority expects one cut or fewer. And it's not surprising, but it is interesting to quantify how much opinion has moved. And meanwhile, two things are evident about projected rates. For the end of 2025, they're steadily moving upward, and there is still a wide range of opinions. The two outliers think there could be 10 cuts by then or zero. Perhaps the most awkward moment of Powell's press conference came when he was asked whether members had placed their dots before or after the inflation numbers, and he revealed that they had had the opportunity to change them. While surprisingly good, the May data still didn't move the odds on monetary policy in the minds of the central bankers. Traders now see just one or two cuts happening this year. That's a big letdown from the roughly six they'd expected at the start of the year and the three that Fed officials penciled in as recently as March. When inflation peaked above 7% in 2022, it reflected a broad-based increase in the price of goods and services. But now, with the key inflation measure back below 3%, price increases are becoming driven mainly by a persistent shortage of housing. Commodity prices and car insurance premiums are also contributing to the stickiness, keeping inflation above the Fed's 2% target. Some also point to Powell himself for prematurely telegraphing interest rate cuts, which ignited optimism in financial markets and fueled economic activity. It's worth looking actually at the factors which are driving the numbers. Shelter, which accounts for about a third of the consumer price index, has proved the most stubborn category. Despite some timelier measures from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Zillow, and apartment lists that show rent growth for new leases coming down, the corresponding components in the CPI have yet to reflect that. Energy prices, especially oil, climbed in the first quarter after falling for much of last year, and any escalation in the war in the Middle East threatens to push them even higher. The rally has translated to more expensive gasoline. Electricity prices have also climbed. Although central bankers prefer to look at so-called core measures of inflation throughout energy prices because of their volatility, the surge in the price of oil and other raw materials has proved impossible to ignore because it can manifest in costlier shipping and merchandise. Insurance costs are another driver of high inflation. Tenants and homeowners insurance is rising near the fastest rate in 9 years, while auto insurance skyrocketed 20.3% in the year through to May. There's a key reason for that. Cars are becoming technologically more complicated now and therefore cost more to repair. But that said, data on premiums do now look just a little better. Powell spurred big market bets on rate cuts by saying in December that cuts were clearly a topic of discussion at the Fed. And the comment's effect was equal to lowering interest rates by around 0.14 percentage points, but that added also about half percentage points to the CPI this year. And the Fed's benchmark rate affects borrowing costs across the rate spectrum. Powell's signalling that the Fed might hold the rate, the current level of 5.25 to 5.5% for longer, means that loans for homes and car purchases will continue to be much more expensive than they were before the Fed started raising back in 2022. Indeed, average mortgage rates in the US have stayed above 7% for the past 2 months. The cost of financing has hindered recent momentum in the housing market as prospective buyers move to the sidelines until financing costs ease. And also inventory remains low because so many homeowners don't want to give up the cheap mortgage that they got when benchmark rates went to zero. That's helping to keep listing prices high. And despite the Fed's stance to stay on hold, some of its global peers have moved, of course, with rate cuts anyway. Last week, the Bank of Canada led the group of seven in lowering borrowing costs, and the European Central Bank followed suit. If these institutions, along with maybe the Bank of England and maybe even the RBA, do move ahead with their own easing cycles, that risks driving down their currencies, raising import prices and undermining progress in getting inflation down. But not easing could then risk lost growth. The ECB, for its part, all but ruled out a second interest rate cut in July and some also questioned if such a move would be wise at the following meeting in September. And the Bank of England pivot to rate cuts is likely to take longer, with traders pricing in the first reduction later in the year. And the Bank of Canada Governor Tiff Macklem made it clear that Canada's interest rate policy wouldn't need to move in lockstep with that of its southern neighbour, despite the potential for downward pressure on the loonie. RBA, of course, will pretty much be stuck into next year, even before this latest move, as we've discussed recently. Generally, higher for longer will keep the US dollar strong against other currencies, because the prospect of persistently lofty US rates makes investments in US securities more appealing on a relative value basis, causing the greenback to appreciate. So with every tick higher in the dollar, things get tougher for developing economies, especially for those who have dollar-denominated debt that becomes more expensive to pay back as their home currency weakens. Take, for example, Bank of Indonesia, who had to raise rates in October and again in April after an extended bout of currency weakness. The central bank had to intervene in currency markets as the rupiah weakened beyond 16,000 for the first time in 4 years. And for countries from Malaysia to Vietnam, economists now expect fewer rate cuts. But there's something else worth noting here too, and that is that the FOMC members also give their estimate for the long-term Fed funds rate. That number dropped to around 2.5% before the pandemic, implying belief in a distinctively low inflation environment as the norm for the future. The estimates are now higher, up to about 2.8%. That's the highest since 2019. And the chances are that they will move further again. Powell left the Fed's options actually wide open. A negative take on all of this could be that it doesn't have a clue as to what's happening next. Maybe a more positive interpretation could be that the Fed isn't the only one baffled by the economic data at present and that it's wise to remain reactive. Either way, the May inflation data was undeniably good and consistent with rate cuts later this year, perhaps early September, but there's still too much unknown to go much further than that, and so we end up with rates higher for longer. In fact, much higher for much longer. And that then puts more pressure on many other central banks, including the RBA. All of this suggests to me that we are going to see rates staying high, putting more pressure on households and businesses, and making things distinctively more difficult around the world. What the Fed does has global impact. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.